May.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 503, and it's July 26, 1981. There's a wedding that's going to take place in Great Britain this week. By the time any of you receive this broadcast, the wedding will be over. Prince Charles and Lady Diana, the important guest list is not who's at the wedding, but who isn't going to be at the wedding, which primarily one of the persons is President Ronald Reagan of the United States, and I'll talk about the discrepancies in the medical reports of the bullet wounds that he received in a few minutes. Is he scared to travel? Is he too sick to travel? What is the reason for his staying home? He's staying close to home. Another couple that will not travel, cousins of the king, future king of England and the present royalty, the prince, the king and queen of Spain declined the invitation. They almost lost their throne in February. There was an attempted coup. In March, Ronald Reagan was shot. The Nazis almost took over their throne. And again, in May, there was an attempt, and they were planned to assassinate the king and queen of Spain. They said that they'll stay home, and I guess they, like Ronald Reagan, prefer to be in one piece and not travel. And of course, the Pope, I don't know if he would attend a wedding like that or not. There were other important Catholic events and a large meeting of Catholic officials at Lourdes last week that I mentioned before. He's in the hospital and still sick with fever and facing another surgery, and he also is not moving. There was a car accident of Queen Juliana and her daughter traveling in Italy last week, a head-on car crash, not advertised much in the paper, a little item in the Houston Post, a friend sent to me, that's the only place I actually saw it. Former Queen Juliana of the Netherlands and other members of her family escaped uninjured from a two-car collision at an intersection in Rome, interestingly, not in Rome, rather in Italy. She was with another daughter and members of the royal family. Queen Juliana is married to Prince Bernhard, the notorious, he was a Nazi, a member of Hitler's Nazi group in Germany, and worked for IG Farb, and then he married Queen Juliana of the Netherlands. That's Prince Bernhard, who formed the Bilderberger Organization and who was caught with bribes and connections to Lockheed and other payoffs. A very suspicious man in terms of controlling world power and directly linked to Licio Gelli, the Nazi that fled down to Argentina at the time of the Masonic scandal in Italy that broke open right after the Pope was shot in Italy. So it was in Italy where Queen Juliana, the wife of Bernhard, almost was killed. She survived. I don't know if she'll attend the wedding or not. And of course, since the first of the year, we've talked about the president of Ecuador being killed and the president of Bangladesh being killed. I understand that Newsweek Tuesday is going to come out with a story on the plans of the CIA to kill Gaddafi. Interestingly enough, the Associated Press carried a story this week. Paper reports a protest over the CIA plan. Members of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, for one of the first times, made public a protest to Ronald Reagan of the CIA plan for a covert operation in Africa. The Washington Post said the nature and more precise location of the operation was not disclosed. This was last week, in this last week in the newspaper. But that this is one of the few times that the House Intelligence Committee, House Select Committee on Intelligence, has made public their findings that are usually kept secret. The Washington Post said, under laws governing the CIA at the present time, the president himself must be determine that covert operations are necessary to protect our national security, and then the CIA has to tell the Intelligence Committee of the House and Senate. And it seems that when they told them they were to kill Gaddafi over in Libya, the assassination plans were stopped. I wrote after the note when I read, this was July 25th, just yesterday, I cut this out of the Washington Post, I made a note, would it be Gaddafi or Idi Amin first? And of course, in December, just before Ronald Reagan took the oath of office, I mentioned on broadcast on the station that the assassination team, the covert action, the people that killed Allende, the killer team were coming back into office full swing, and that we'd have a whole series of political assassinations. But luckily, the powers that be in the Senate and House want Mr. Casey out, and they don't want to kill Gaddafi. And I think America's name has been smeared enough with a long succession of political assassinations, a litany of them, of heads of states, and this certainly would not be in the national interest. I believe that Senator Henry Jackson was preparing the way for the Gaddafi murder. He was on Meet the Press today, that's July 26th, and he was talking about the biggest problem in the world is terrorism funded by Gaddafi to the Soviet Union. I've talked for many, many weeks and for about a year and a half or 2 years on this program about the CIA people that have armed and trained assassination teams with and for Gaddafi, Frank Turple, George Kerkola, Edwin Wilson, Theodore Shackley. They armed Carlos the Jackal for international terrorism around the world. As a matter of fact, the CIA can't afford to kill Gaddafi because they'd have nobody to blame for the terrorism. They have to keep him alive to keep blaming somebody. If he's dead, then who will they blame? And they'll have to look at themselves. But Newsweek will have an article this week on the plans to kill Gaddafi. I'm always interested in what happens to musicians and the killing of musicians ever since Elvis Presley came along and the Beatles and captured the imagination of the youth in this country. And last week I talked about the collision of Harry Chapin. There was an article in the paper this week about a lawsuit involving Dr. George Nikopoulos. I don't know if I pronounced that name right. Nikopoulos, he was indicted for overprescribing drugs that killed Elvis Presley, and he's now under a 14-count indictment with 9 other patients, and the trial is supposed to begin in September 1981. That's about 4 weeks and 2 days from now. And one of the people in the trial against this doctor is Jerry Lee Lewis, the musician who's been on a critical list for the last 2 weeks. When I came into KLRB 2 weeks ago, we didn't know whether or not he was going to pass away. The July 12th broadcast, he's still alive, but he was in critical condition. But we didn't know at the time that in 6 weeks from now, he was part of a 14-count indictment against the same doctor that has been charged with killing Elvis Presley. Lewis had been rushed to a hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, and had abdominal pain and was spitting up blood. And the doctors are absolutely baffled. They don't know what caused a perforation, according to a news account this week. They haven't determined the cause of the tear in his stomach. And when they were asked, could it have been the drugs that were prescribed for him, the doctor said, in lieu of the trial coming up, I wouldn't touch the question of whether this stomach bleeding was caused by the drugs with a 10-foot pole. Lewis was hospitalized in 1977, the same year that Elvis Presley died, for allegedly a peptic ulcer. He also had been a friend of Presley's, and they worked together. This doctor had prescribed large amounts of Prelude and Quaaludes, but we don't know what else was in them. Anyway, the hearing takes place in a criminal court September 21st, 1981, and I don't know whether Jerry Lee Lewis will be alive enough to be among the other 9 other people, patients, charging this doctor with the problems. But an article in the paper this week suggested that the same doctor who was responsible for doing in Elvis Presley, the real king of the rock music that started the movement, really going and inspired so many people, whether this doctor also was responsible for Lewis. According to this article, Lewis collapsed when he was preparing for a concert tour to promote his new top-of-the-chart record. Interestingly enough, almost every rock star musician that died just on the eve of a new concert coming out, whether it was Mama Cass or Otis Redding or Jim Croce or Janis Joplin with the Pearl album. They were all on the crest of a big break when something happened to them and they died. There's a new magazine on the stands. You might have seen it in the supermarkets, the markets. It's called The Investigator. The publisher is Jack Anderson, and the chief investigator is the gentleman from Texas, J.J. Arms. It's an interesting magazine. There's marvelous articles in there, one after the other. It's put out by a man named William McGraw. I talked to him this week. I called him in El Paso, Texas, and talked to him. And he has a statement as the editor of this new magazine that he feels it is the absolute obligation of people to uncover scandals. And he said the purpose of this is to give you an idea of some of the scandals that fall on the cutting room floor of newspapers. And he made a point in the editorial of saying the uncovering of a scandal begins with a perception that ripples slowly across society. Now, at KLRB, I have talked for 10 years and on other stations about these various scandals that take place. They begin small and they grow big, not only on this station, but on other radio stations. And this man who is taking this magazine out, the editor, William McGraw, feels that even though they start small, that they do come across society, these scandals can be uncovered. And he feels that the press, by and large, ignores stories. He says they fail to grasp early the importance of some stories, and reporters don't jump on it to widen the beachhead. They don't confront it. They don't reach the levels where the public advocates can take it up, and the investigative agencies then can grind, and mass opinion can get redress. That when we see a sign of a story or a scandal, too often it falls, and he blames a lot of it on the newspaper cutting room. And the purpose of this new magazine, he said, is to disinter political skeletons that were once laid to rest and dig up scandals that the government tried to cover up to expose corporate conniving, labor abuses, and other skullduggeries that might serve the public interest. It's an interesting magazine, and I recommend that you look for it on the newsstands or subscribe to it. He goes on to say that preposterous lies are told to make the powerful look good. Grievous blunders are committed by officials in the name of the government. The public is cheated by men who are sworn to uphold public trust. But if one investigative reporter makes a little bit of a mistake, there's an outrage. And he goes on to say that he wants the facts, and he'll verify facts and print them. Now, this first issue has a section by William Proxmire. There's a confidential file by Jack Anderson. There's an article by McGraw himself on the oil that is in America that we could use, as much oil as in Saudi Arabia. There's another interesting article in here on the revival of the French Connection, you know, by Hank Messick. I've mentioned on this program that one of the reasons I thought for shooting Pope John Paul II and his links to Pope Paul VI and Richard Nixon and later to Ronald Reagan and the American CIA was that the Republican government had cut off the growing of opium in Turkey that went down to Marseille and the French Connection in order to give the narcotic trade to the Shah of Iran and the Southeast Asia gang, that it was a dope war and that this group had tied off the source of income of the Turkish people who were growing the opium and bringing it from Colombia and other places instead. And that as soon as the Pope was shot and as soon as there was a rearrangement of the narcotic traffic after the Shah was out, then the French Connection was revived. And Hank Messick, an authority on that, has an article in this magazine. And there is another story here, The Unsolved Mystery, The Deadly Double. And this article is about the intelligence agencies missing a tip-off on the Pearl Harbor attack. And maybe next week I'll do at length, if I have time, and if you don't get the magazine or go over it with you, the information in the New Yorker magazine 6 weeks prior to Pearl Harbor, and then finally the November 22nd issue before Pearl Harbor, the attack took place December the 7th. And this author, Diana Huntress, analyzes what was in the New Yorker magazine that gave the clues that Pearl Harbor was going to be bombed by the Japanese. And also it goes into an agent of the OSS who placed the ads in the papers. It's a mystery who done it, who did the placing the ad and the information about the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Now that interested me because in April of this year I had on this program stories from Newsweek and the Washington Post, and the Washington Post owns the Newsweek, on indications that Ronald Reagan was going to be shot at the time that he was. And I also got material, fine material, from researcher in the Southwest from Texas on the New York Times articles that indicated that Ronald Reagan would be shot the night of the Academy Award. And no, that was March the 30th. And these were placed March the 15th in the New York Times, a full page of messages that would indicate that the event would take place. Now, I've seen this phenomena quite a few times, and I've mentioned it on this broadcast. The case of the book, The Black Abductor, in San Diego, that came out prior to the Patty Hearst kidnapping. There was no such author. There was no such book publisher. It was a story of the heiress of a newspaper chain in California who is living with her teacher from a private school, and she's going to University of Berkeley, and she's kidnapped by a black radical. The whole script before the kidnapping was in the book, The Black Abductor. So I've noticed this for a long time, the phenomena, but it was interesting to see in this first issue of The Investigator the indications going back to Pearl Harbor, and now becoming aware that the news media does, in fact, give you clues to events prior to their happening. I've watched it for a long time, and this article is interesting. There is a book, another book I mentioned, The Murder on Embassy Row, last week and for the last few weeks, the murder of Orlando Letelier and Sandra Moffat, because the people that were involved in that killing, Edwin Wilson, had close contacts to the intelligence community, the Gaddafi connections, the CIA, the detonation weapons that blew up the car. Letelier was the Chilean ambassador to the United States. Allende, the president of Chile, was murdered, the elected president, by the CIA in 1973. And in 1976, Letelier was murdered in Washington, D.C. Now, I have a lot of information on Chile, and I would like to go into the Allende murder and the Letelier murders a little bit each week, or maybe one broadcast on just those, because it involves George Bush, our vice president, Alexander Haig, our secretary of state, Vernon Walters, the floating advisor to Ronald Reagan right now, Theodore Shackley, the man that supplied the weapons for Gaddafi, the assassination weapons, George Corcola and his links to Frank Turple, of the CIA, who set up assassination teams and do security for the Secret Service, for Exxon, for Scotland Yard. These murders, the Allende murder and the Letelier murder, involve the very people that are in power today, the same people that would kill Gaddafi, and the Senate and the House Committee stopped it. These people are in power today, and they ran brutal regimes and still do, allowing and teaching torture in Chile and Argentina, and they're doing and Paraguay and Brazil, wiping out Indian populations, Uruguay. And because they're in power today and nobody has stopped their power, it gives you a little preview of what we could expect from them if they are not stopped and people don't demand an end to the bloodbath that they will put, if they have their way, in El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Honduras, and so forth. Now, the book The Death in Washington by Donald Freed with Dr. Fred Simon Landis goes into an area that I have done many broadcasts on, and they refer to Michael Townley. He's of the CIA, worked for Ford Motor Company. His father's vice president of a bank in Florida. He worked for NASA. Townley went down to Chile, and he worked with General Contreras. And this is from the Don Freed book, Death in Washington. The other book, The Murder on Embassy Row, several weeks ago, I talked about General Contreras. He was a Nazi. He worked with the Nazis in Chile and in Argentina and South America. And he was the man who went up to see Vernon Walters, who was deputy director of the CIA, and said, Walters will go along with us on torture and missing persons. Walters is our advisor in El Salvador and Honduras at the present time. Walters will go along with torture and missing persons, and they went to see George Bush also, who was director of the CIA when Letelier and Sandra Moffat were killed. And in this book, it reports about Michael Townley working with General Contreras. Townley, Michael Townley, keep in mind he was an American citizen who worked with Edwin Wilson, the gentleman who has the farm next to Senator John Warner of Virginia. Townley was in charge of organizing former members of various fronts in Chile into special interrogation units. Townley and a Colonel Pedro Espinosa set up the DINA, D-I-N-A. That was the secret police similar to SAVAK that the CIA set up in Greece. They were charged with going to a place called Colonia Dignidad. Now, for those of you who do not have my past broadcasts, April in 1979, I did three broadcasts. They were numbered 385, 387, and 386, and 387. I refer often to Colonia Dignidad and the links and comparisons to Jonestown. But if you want to order those broadcasts or get the sheets on them with the bibliography, you can. but talking about Colonial Dignitat. Now, Michael Townley from the CIA set up Colonial Dignitat. I said Dignitat in Chile, which borders on Argentina, which is a haven described in Ladislas Farago's book, Aftermath, haven for Joseph Mengele's and for Martin Bormann and all the top Nazis that were in South America floating around from the end of World War II and going back and forth to Europe or wherever they meet. They were down in Colonia. And Townley worked with these Nazis and set up a torture center. It was called the Benevolent and Educational Society of Dignity. Remember Jim Jones said, die with dignity. According to the book, Death in Washington, they had thousands of acres in southern Chile. It was called a model farm, and I did comparisons earlier on the model farm of Jonestown that Mark Lane and Charles Gary were selling in the model farm of Colonia. They had women and children on this farm from West Germany. No visitors are allowed to see the acreage under cultivation. It has a hospital, a factory, an orphanage. The children only learn German and English. Michael Townley of the CIA and Espinosa of Chile organized Colonial Dignitat for political prisoners, and Amnesty International described this is what Townley of the CIA, working with Edwin Wilson and Vernon Walters and George Bush, would do. They put leather hoods placed over prisoners' heads. They were stuck to their faces with chemical adhesives. In the cell, torturers were carried. They had closed-circuit radio systems where the detainees were taken naked, tied to their berths with electric shocks applied. To one of the prisoners, a torturer made the statement, the Colonial Dignitat is the work of the Nazi concentration camps continued in Chile. And, of course, in this book, page 115, 114, run by the Central Intelligence Agency. That's why it's so important when I say that Reinhard Gehlen, chief of Hitler's intelligence, Eastern Division, set up the CIA. When that happened between 1945 and 47 and the National Security Council, these tortures are going on today in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Chile, and Argentina, and Paraguay, and Uruguay right now. It hasn't stopped. This is 1981. Now, Townley worked at Colonial Dignitat in the DINA, the D-I-N-A Center, which was a grisly laboratory for experiments conducted on prisoners, not only for getting information, but to perfect the science of torture. This is in 1976 when George Bush, our vice president, was director of the CIA. In Colonial Dignitat, they were subject to different experiments. Without any interrogation at all, dogs were trained to commit sexual aggressions and destroy sexual organs of both sex. Prisoners were tortured and personalized, finding their weaknesses. This so-called home for boys, the leader of the colony is Paul Schaefer, accused of criminal sexual abuse of children in Germany in 1960 when he moved to Chile. The group on the Argentine border of Colonial Dignitat is run by business interests, the United States, supported by the Nazis, by the West German and American embassies. Amnesty International has described Colonial Dignitat as a torture and detention center, and Michael Townley of the CIA worked at the farm and was busy, according to this book, quartering people and taking off arms and legs. Townley was known as Welch, Michael Townley Welch, in the Center for Torture. There was a radio station that went to Venezuela, Colombia, France, Sweden, and Italy, and 50% of the agents of this police force were military personnel, not civilians, that worked in the countries all around the world that came there. There was a death squad, a bloodbath that continued. One man, Andrea Silva, appeared without a head. The body of Daniel Mendez had the arms torn off. Ruben Vargas was without ears. Segundo Rodrigo was without one arm. Orlando Brobizier without hands and nose. And Rosendo Robello with one leg torn away at the root. Every day, while Michael Townley of the Central Intelligence Agency, working with Vernon Walters and George Bush and the CIA, every day, hideously mutilated, disfigured corpses floated down the canals and rivers and onto the beaches, and there were quartered men everywhere. Now, this is when Letellier was taken into prison, and then he was later released. He spent 364 days in 8 concentration camps, left, and went to Washington, D.C., and then was blown up. Now, this book goes into David Phillips of the Central Intelligence Agency and his role in these activities. Now, this is a very strong book. It links to things that I've said about colonial dignitas, the fascism, the role of Henry Kissinger, the Nazi, the General Haig, the State Department, our bloodbath that hopefully, maybe with the House and the Senate stopping the murder of Gaddafi, they will stop these terrible indignities against people that are going on under the name of business and multinational profit. The important thing is that one of the people named in this book, David Phillips, is now suing the authors of this book, Donald Freed and Dr. Fred Landis. Death in Washington names George Bush. It names General Vernon Walters, Henry Kissinger, Michael Vernon Townley, William Buckley, both the Buckley brothers, for their hideous role in Central and South America, which they're continuing with their bloodbath. Senator James Buckley, Alexander Haig, and Dean Hinton. Now, Dean Hinton was in Chile. He was Guatemala when that country was overthrown by the CIA. He was in Chile when the tortures went on, and today he's the new ambassador to El Salvador. That's just what we need, is Mr. Dean Hinton in El Salvador. He was part of the coup that did away with Allende. David Phillips is suing Donald Freed and others. It's a $90 million lawsuit. If you want to send money to Donald Freed, they need $5,000 to defend themselves. This is a showpiece suit. They need $5,000 right away. The address is 3760 Cardiff Avenue, C-A-R-D-I-F-F Avenue, Los Angeles, 90034. If I went too fast, you can write or call me or send a postcard. Send $25 if you have it, or $10 or $5. Ramsey Clark is going to help with the defense. He's volunteered his time. Ramsey Clark was once the Attorney General. They're asking for help. They need $5,000. If ever there was a strong book and a good person, I don't agree always with some of the things Don Freed does, but he was the one who brought Louis Tackwood out, who wrote the Glass House Tapes, who talked about the plans to kill Richard Nixon in the White House at the time of the nomination. And he talked about the secret team that I referred to over and over again on these broadcasts, the same secret team of fascism, such as the Masonic group in Italy that has been temporarily broken up. Don Freed has written about the Rosenbergs, about the Black Panther trials. He has a lot of good books out, and they certainly deserve a break. I don't even see how David Atlee Phillips at this time has the nerve to suit Donald Freed, and I offered him all of my investigative Noxy, anything I have, to put together the what he's saying in this book about the colonial dignitas, the CIA, and the role of these people. Because this isn't past history. What I'm talking about with you isn't academic. Sometimes we go back 17 years to who killed John Kennedy, or the Martin Luther King murder, or Robert Kennedy murder. Sometimes we say about the history of World War II and the Nazis. But these are people who came to power through the murders of many people, maybe 200, 300, 400 people that they had, well, thousands, really. I mean, the director of the CIA, William Colby, admitted killing 20 or 40 to 60,000 with the Phoenix program in Southeast Asia. I'm just talking about heads of states or lawyers or writers or witnesses to trials and witnesses to Senate hearings in order to keep their power. These people are stone killers, and they will quarter. I don't want to scare you and say the boogeyman is coming, but they can't get away with these things. They shouldn't. And if there's anything that you can do to help contribute to Don Freed's trial, and I'm sure he will win it, you will be proud that you took some part in it, because we all broke, but we all have to do something for him. It's terribly important. Came back on KLRB after a break of a short period of time. It seemed short to me. July 27th, that was just a year ago tonight, and I've referred to that broadcast where I talked about the most important news stories of the past 2 years that had preceded July 27th. It was exactly a year ago tomorrow. And again, Among those stories was the Jonestown murders experimentations and the links to Chile and Argentine. That was broadcast number 451. And under that, Colonial Dignidad, Operation Condor, those are the assassination teams, Chile-Argentine assassination teams, going back to the JFK assassination. Now, this whole era of Bush, Walters, Kissinger, Townley, Buckley, Haig, the whole gang, should really be swept out, just as the top people in Italy were swept out. I say this over and over, but they shouldn't be allowed in government, and I hope they don't fall easy like Casey or John Mitchell, some of these people. I hope that the people involved in these crimes will suddenly come forward and expose them, hopefully, or more investigators will get on their cases and show the torturous links that they've had to hundreds and thousands of deaths in the past years. Now, we'll take a one-minute break. Time for you to turn that cassette over if you're taping these broadcasts, and then we'll go on to another subject in 1 minute.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International.